on today's Run to the Top podcast.
What are the training factors that lead to an injury? And it's well known that errors in your training program, that is the straw that broke the camel's back. So if you want to set yourself up for an injury, just stop following your training program.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for Run to the Top podcast. Has running ever caused you pain? Today's interview is with Dr. Reid Ferber. Dr. Ferber holds a PhD in sports medicine and gait biomechanics and is also a board-certified athletic therapist. He is director and chief scientific officer of the Running Injury Clinic at the University of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, world leaders in 3D gait analysis technology. Dr. Ferber specializes in the research and clinical treatment of lower extremity injuries and is internationally recognized as an expert in running injuries, clinical biomechanics, and rehabilitation research. Let's learn from an expert about running pain, state-of-the-art methods for gait analysis, proper biomechanics, and possible remedies for ailing runners. We'll be back with the doctor after a short break to acknowledge our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by the newkneeshop.com. Don't let knee pain keep you from completing your long runs, or worse, sidelining you altogether. An innovative new product called New Knee can help. New Knee is designed specifically to relieve that dreaded runner's knee pain. Let New Knee help you get back to running without knee pain. Available today at newkneeshop.com. That's N-U-N-E-E. SHOP.com. Use code RC30 for a 30% discount. Welcome back. We are back with Dr. Reid Ferber, gait analysis and running pain expert at the Running Injury Clinic in Calgary, Alberta. Dr. Ferber is a board certified athletic trainer and holds a PhD in sports medicine and gait biomechanics from the University of Oregon. He has completed postdoctoral research fellowships in bioengineering and specializes in the research and clinical treatment of lower extremity injuries. Dr. Ferber is currently a professor working jointly with the faculties of kinesiology, nursing, and the Cumming School of Medicine at the University of Calgary. He is the founder and director of the Running Injury Clinic and internationally recognized as a leading expert in biomechanics research using wearable technology for the prevention and treatment of musculoskeletal injuries and disease. Currently, he leads a team of UCalgary researchers in the NSERC Wearable Technology Research and Collaboration Training Program to train the next generation of wearable technology experts. Lots of big words. Welcome, Dr. Reid Ferber.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
Oh, I'm really fascinated by this whole subject, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. So look forward to getting some more details from you. I am interested in starting with our four basic questions. It always happens at the beginning of every podcast. So are you ready for the basic four?
You bet. Let's do it.
Okay. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where do you live now? And are you a runner? And if so, what is your favorite race distance? Or if not a runner, what is your favorite outdoor activity?
Yeah, I'm 48 years old. I was born in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And I live in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I'm fortunate enough to be back in my hometown. I don't know if I consider myself a runner. I'm more of a plodder. I'm certainly a talker. I can't hold a conversation, then I'm probably running too fast. And I guess back in the day, my favorite distance was the half marathon. Mm-hmm. I've kind of done more half marathons than I can count. I've only done 4 full marathons. And so these days, I just kind of plod along and more from a recreational and fitness standpoint.
You've got some beautiful places to run there in Calgary. I've had the opportunity to do that, and it's a beautiful area. A little cold once in a while, though.
It is a little cold, yeah.
Okay, well, let's get into some of these talking points. You have quite the pedigree with the University of Oregon and the University of Calgary with degrees in biomechanics, sports medicine, and physical education. So have you worked with any runners or athletes whose names we might recognize?
Oh, probably. We've seen thousands of athletes, from Olympic athletes all the way down to people who just want to, you know, be more mobile, and everybody in between. I'm not one to name drop, but yeah, we've seen quite a few Olympic athletes, world-class triathletes. Everyone's a fun little puzzle. And, you know, we just try to put the pieces of the puzzle together to try to optimize everyone and keep them running.
Yeah. And you've been doing this for several years. So tell us about your lab at the University of Calgary, what you do there, how you do it, and why is it important to runners?
Yeah, what we try to do is bring a more scientific edge to understanding why somebody's injured. So really what we specialize in is determining what's the root cause of the injury. So starting back with my first postdoctoral fellowship, that was with Dr. Irene Davis when she was at the University of Delaware. Irene ran a fantastic program, also called the Running Injury Clinic, at the University of Delaware, where people would fly in. Well, first of all, she would hand pick one person to get analyzed, and we would do just this fantastic, almost nearly a full day analysis on these individuals. And I really appreciated the scientific approach to it all. And I would say to Irene, I would kind of joke with her that we should open this up to the public. So when I came to Calgary and I finished my second research fellowship, which basically just meant that I was too scared to get a real job, so I decided to be a researcher.
I've heard that before with students and people who are doing good research.
Yeah. Well, at the time, I decided that, you know what, I wanted to open up a clinic. I wanted to bring some science into the clinical side of things. Mm-hmm. And really, at the end of the day, what we started working towards was, how do we take our scientific biomechanics equipment, our gait analysis lab, mm-hmm. how do we get that into a clinic? And how do we allow a clinician to do a scientific three-dimensional gait analysis to figure out the root cause of an injury? So that started way back in, so I opened the clinic in 2004 is when it all started.
Wow.
You know, I kind of joke, I don't like opinions. I don't even want my opinion. I just want data.
Uh-huh.
So we've tried to, you know, provide really good data so a clinician can make a good decision about how to treat this patient by understanding the root cause of the injury.
And you're working with clinicians, or you're working with clinics around the world. I'd like to hear more about that, because the data part is fantastic, that you can glean data from all of these different resources. I mean, you must have a lot of data to work with.
We do. So one of the driving factors in all of this is, starting back in, I get probably 2006 is when we really started to shape the technology in a way that we could receive data from any clinic that was using our system. Mm-hmm. So the first step was, how do we miniaturize? How do we take our multi-camera system, which is about most labs are 8 cameras. How do we get that down to fewer cameras? How do we make the price point affordable for a clinician? How do we make the software easy for them to use? Mm-hmm. And then how do we get that data back into our servers so we can conduct more evidence-based research? So skip ahead. There's about 100 clinics using our 3D gait system. Wow. And our Kinetigate system around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that data flows back into our research database.
Wow.
And we have partnerships with around a dozen different universities that can access the database. They can also provide data through their scientific experiments, but they can access the data for evidence-based, hypothesis-driven research.
Wow. I mean, that's really amazing. Now, tell me about where some of these clinics are. Are you working with them around the world? But what are some of the countries that you're working with?
Yeah, so we have clinic partners. I'll kind of start, well, certainly Canada, the U.S., Brazil, Australia, New Zealand, the U.K., Spain, Singapore, Korea, to name a few.
Yeah, wow. Now, if someone wants to have gait analysis or get analyzed and learn more about what's going on, can they utilize these services, or does it have to be by referral, or, you know, how does somebody like me actually take advantage of what you offer?
Yeah. So nearly for every single clinic, it's a walk-in appointment.
Or you can,
there's no referral necessary. You know, those rules change. They're mostly run by physical therapists, and the rules around referral changed probably two decades ago, so that you do not need a doctor's referral. And, you know, our hope is that it's the McDonaldization of gait analysis.
Yeah.
So, you know, you hope that your McDonald's hamburger tastes the same wherever you go.
Right.
And you would hope that you would get our goal is to ensure that you can receive the same scientific gait analysis. Doesn't matter if you're in Auckland, New Zealand, or Calgary, Alberta, or Victoria, British Columbia, or Seoul, Korea. It should be the same, you know, based on the technology.
And what is this going to look like when I'm finished? What is a day or an analysis period appointment go? Both cost wise, what is it going to cost me approximately? And then what am I also going to get from it when the appointment is finished?
Yeah, so everyone has their own charge depending on their market and where they're located. It's anywhere between $100 and $400.
Okay.
It's about a 45-minute appointment. And at the end of the day, what we do is we take your data and we compare you to a homogeneous subgroup. So we simply compare you to a group of runners, hundreds and hundreds of runners that are very similar to you. So, Stephanie, you are a Boston Marathon qualifier. You're female. I don't know what age you are. So, but what we're going to do, and I don't know how your foot strikes the ground. Those are all important factors, because we actually do a four-way model. We take four factors in consideration. We compare males to males and females to females. We published that research back in 2002.
Wow.
Well, understanding that males and females have a slightly different gait pattern based on differences in anatomical structure and strength and flexibility. We know that competitive and recreational runners, or novice and experienced runners, run differently. We know that age plays a factor. So we take that into consideration. And we also know that there's a small percentage of the population has either a natural forefoot or a midfoot strike. And we want to compare those people to their homogeneous subgroup. So we calculate what your foot strike angle is. And then we compare rear foot strikers to rear foot strikers. By doing so, it's not just apples to apples. We're actually comparing green apples to green apples.
Yeah. In a general way, I mean, like if you've got women to women or men to men, that would be one statistic, right? But then you get much more specific than just women to women or men to men.
Yeah, we're not. And even if we just did it women to women, we're still not able to drill down deep enough to really understand what is typical and what is atypical about you as an individual patient. And actually, what we don't do, we don't actually provide you with an angular measure. We don't tell you that your foot pronates 6.4 degrees. We just tell you if your foot is within normal ranges, or if it's excessive, or if it's reduced.
Oh, okay.
It's a really easy to understand analysis. And then, you know, we teach the clinician, we teach the physical therapist how to interpret the data to make a good decision.
And then what would I do with this data that you're giving me? Obviously, the clinician and I are going to have some kind of communication. And is there follow-up information for me to use? Is there a follow-up appointment for me to get retested? How does that part work?
Oh, yeah. And again, every clinic's a little bit different, but most all of them have a follow-up appointment. They're going to put you into a, you know, what I would call a phase one rehab program to address those mechanical patterns that are most atypical, and kind of key in on the low-hanging fruit to get you towards recovery. And then there's always follow-up appointments, because you can always, you know, we actually suggest that a gait analysis is, you know, it's kind of like going to see the dentist. It's something that can change year to year. Certainly changes depending on injury, depending on training status. Weather can play a role as well.
Wow.
So it is something that should be, you know, finely tuned.
Yeah.
At least if you're getting ready for a new event. For example, if you're a half marathoner and you're getting ready for your first full marathon, we would suggest that you get a gait analysis done to help with your training program, help optimize you as an athlete.
Interesting. because you're going to be running a little bit different if you're training for a marathon than if you're training for a half marathon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly injury-wise, there's more chance to be injured on the longer distances, so you want to know what to watch out for.
Yeah, and certainly if you have sustained an injury in the past, mm-hmm. you're far more likely to sustain a new injury, not necessarily just a reoccurrence, but a new injury, especially if you switch into a different training mode altogether.
Now, do you offer free information at your labs too? Is there a website where people can go and just kind of check it all out and learn something about, you know, what the process is and all of that kind of stuff?
Well, of course. So on runninginjuryclinic.com, we have a lot of our research is on there. We actually have an injury tool mm-hmm. where you can just click on the body part that hurts and we tell you what it is and why it hurts and what you can do about it. We have a whole list of exercises that have
Excellent.
All been grounded in scientific research
yeah.
in terms of helping to alleviate injuries and pain.
I love that this is scientific. I really like that. There is definitely a place for kind of the feel good stuff or the, you know, just discussing where your pain is and what's happening, what it feels like. But the scientific data then can add dimension to it because you're talking about numbers and you're talking about metrics. And I love that part.
Yeah. Thanks very much. We've really tried to stay grounded in research. Mm-hmm. Again, nobody wants my opinion. We just want data.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm fascinated by this whole subject, but I did want to go into a couple of more research projects that you've worked on and have you go into some detail on them. There was one that was called, let's see, risk factors associated with running-related musculoskeletal injuries. What was that one about and what were the results or are you still working on it?
Yeah, that was more of a systematic review where we kind of took a look at the body of literature. At that point in time, I believe that was a 2010 publication. And what we wanted to do was look at, you know, what's going on down at the foot, what's going on up at the hip.
Mm-hmm.
And a knee injury, for example, the knee is the most commonly injured joint, but rarely is the sole cause of a knee injury the knee.
Gotcha.
In other words, there's something coming up from a foot up, something from a hip down perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to really try to identify what are the training factors that lead to an injury. And it's well known that errors in your training program, that is the straw that broke the camel's back. So if you want to set yourself up for an injury, mm-hmm. just stop following your training program. And, you know, here in Calgary, we always have the great examples here are, you know, it's early winter. Uh-huh. We've just had a nice snowfall over the last week or so, and the ground's slippery. So you will change your gait mechanics simply because there's snow on the ground.
Totally.
So that means you need to adjust your training program slightly.
Right.
And if you don't do that, if you go for the same 6-mile run or 10-kilometer run that you were scheduled to do
mm-hmm.
and really alter your gait mechanics, take shorter strides, widen your step because it's slippery out,
mm-hmm.
and you're probably going to set yourself up for an injury. And in the same respect, if you were only supposed to run 6 miles,
uh-huh.
but the sun came out and the snow melted and the you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful day. And you decide that you're going to run 10 miles instead just because you're feeling so good, that's setting yourself up for an injury as well.
Oh, darn. I like the second. But, you know, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm thinking now about trail running, for example, where there's a lot of adjustment with each step, which probably has its benefits and its disadvantages.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, so that research, again, back to that study, you know, that was just talking about how that is a very well-known factor. Every scientist agrees that errors in your training program or committing a training error will lead to, you know, a higher risk factor in terms of an injury.
Very interesting. Now, how many people were involved in that research?
That was a systematic review. So it wasn't necessarily a research study.
Mm.
It was a study in all other studies.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And then the other two things, if I just quickly,
yeah.
is that, you know, we know that injuries are a combination of both atypical foot and atypical hip, but What we found is that the foot is very ill-defined in terms of, you know, what is an excessively pronating foot. There's actually very few scientific metrics out there. So that drove us forward to define what is a typical foot. And that lack of hip muscle strength is a key factor in injuries from the big toe all the way up to the knee. So if you don't have strength and key stabilizers, specifically gluteus medius, which is the muscle on the outside of your hip, then that can lead to an injury or a higher risk of injury.
Very interesting. Now I've got two more studies that I wanted to talk to you about. And this one was called the Run Ripped Study, Running Injury Prevention and Prediction Database. Do you have more information on that?
Yeah. So that's always an ongoing study. So, you know, it's a running injury prevention program. That's really the underlying theme of all of our research is collecting data, amassing it into a database itself, and performing evidence-based research. So we are always enrolling people into that study. Currently, we're doing that. We've been doing that for the last 2 years, specifically with wearable technology. And we're not even collecting data in our laboratory anymore. We're collecting data out in the real world. I always joke that, you know, nobody gets injured on my treadmill. Nobody gets injured in a clinic. So we have shifted our research focus to wearable technology and collecting biomechanical data out in the real world as part of the Run Ripped or the Research Injury Prevention Program and accumulation of data.
So that program will go on as long as there's some funding for it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of the undercurrent of all of our research.
It sounds it sounds like it would be great information. And how do you set up then the actual collection of data for something like this? You've got to have standardization. So how does that happen?
So we're using scientific grade. They're called inertial measurement units or an IMU. An IMU is a combination of accelerometers, gyroscopes, and magnetometers. You know, it's just a fancy tool that we're using to, we're attaching it to runners and we're following them during a training program. So for the last 2 years, we've been following groups of runners out of the University of Calgary's marathon training program. They go through an 8-month training program and we try to collect pretty much every step that they take using scientific grade inertial measurement units. Just one, we attach one to their low back, which is about where their center of mass is. So we're just trying to understand whole body movements and come up with algorithms to understand injury prediction, recovery from injury, and lots of other questions related to these external factors that you don't have in a laboratory setting, like weather and pedestrians and routes.
Wow.
Picking out of the ground and change of shoes. And it's a very complex problem once you move outside the laboratory.
Indeed. And do you have sponsors for these things? I know you're working on this, I forget what the term is, but the kind of clothing that is technological. But you have sponsors who sponsor these projects?
Yeah, they're all government funded peer reviewed grants that we receive. So the NSERC, the National Science Education Research Council, one that you mentioned, that is a training program, and we've called it the WeTrac training program, Wearable Technology Research and Collaboration. And I'm very proud to say that I'm leading that on campus with a group of other 10 other researchers, and we have funding to bring in about 80 graduate students over the next 6 years to train the next generation of wearable technology experts.
Wow. And where is wearable technology these days?
Yeah, wearable technology is still mostly aimed at activity monitoring and categorization of sports. It's not necessarily aimed at healthcare. It's not necessarily aimed in a way that would provide insight. So what I mean by that is wearable technology is really geared towards telling you what you did and telling you what you have done.
Yeah.
So here's how many steps you took today. Here's how many calories you burned. Congratulations, you achieved 10,000 steps.
Right.
And all of that is good information, but it doesn't tell you what maybe you should do tomorrow. And that's really what our research is all about, providing the runner with insight and giving them good information to make a good decision about what to do for their next run.
That was one of my questions, is kind of where is wearable technology going?
Oh, I think it's going to be fascinating. You know, we're trying to lead this worldwide. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great researchers working on this. You know, we are using wearable technology. We're combining it with artificial intelligence or machine learning methods to predict injury. That's kind of our lofty goal. And we can use wearable technology. I can tell if somebody's running on sidewalk or grass, for example. I can tell someone they're getting fatigued before they even feel fatigued, just based on changes in their overall mechanics and changes in heart rate. And now we're trying to aim it towards, again, providing the runner with insight. What should be your training? How should you adjust your training tomorrow based on your data for the past month?
So interesting. I love it. I can see that there's always going to be a place for the personal connection, whether it's with an advisor, a coach like me, or whether it's someone through your clinic who is actually personally discussing issues with the patient, so to speak. But having facts, having statistics, having data that is beyond just one person relating to another person it's fascinating, and it also just seems to me like it can create much more accuracy in training as well as in what your realistic goals can be.
Yeah, and wearable technology is just evolving so rapidly that we're happy to be involved from a scientific perspective. Mm-hmm. We hope that our results can get into some of these new technologies, and if they can't, then you know we will incorporate it into and to be part of our 3D gait analysis systems that are in these clinics. Mm-hmm. Worldwide. So I actually call the project our check engine light project.
Oh.
So you know, if I can kind of expand that just a little bit. So yeah. If you're driving in your car and your check engine light goes on, the first thing you do is ignore it.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you do is you find a mechanic who's got the diagnostic equipment to figure out what's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In the same respect, we're trying to develop wearable technology algorithms that warn you that something's going on. Something is very different from how you typically behave mechanically.
Right.
We know that you're going to ignore it, just like every good runner ignores an injury until they can no longer run. But once you start paying attention to that check engine light, then we want to drive you towards a clinic that has diagnostic equipment in terms of our gait analysis technology or somebody else's gait analysis technology, and that the clinician can then make a very good informed decision. No opinions necessary.
Right.
We just want to provide them with the data and help everyone move in the right direction.
Right. But the winning combination is going to be someone who can take a personal connection with the person, with the patient, and at the same time have so much good information and data to share that then, you know, it's a really comprehensive relationship.
Yeah, that's exactly, you've hit the nail on the head right there. So, you know, everyone is a puzzle and they deserve to be treated as an individual puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And receive a scientific analysis of their data. So we don't really do group designed research anymore. We do individual subject specific research.
Mm-hmm.
And wearable technology is fantastic at allowing us to accumulate massive amounts of data that are largely ignored prior to all this. But we've set up the infrastructure that we can look at all of someone's data and provide a very high level scientific overview.
So cool. Now, there's one more project that you worked on that I wanted to bring up because knees are such an issue for most of us. Knees and hips seem to be problems for a lot of runners. So this one was a project you worked on called Real-Time Feedback Device and Software for Gait Retraining in Patients with Knee Osteoarthritis.
Yeah, so that was a... that was a project that I was involved in terms of, you know, how can we use gait analysis technology to help somebody walk or run just a little bit differently. So we've taken a little bit different of a bend to that in terms of how can, more recently we're looking at how therapeutic exercise can be used to alter your gait mechanics.
Mm.
But certainly, you know, technology abounds. Wearable technology, gait analysis technology in clinics, to change and modify somebody's gait pattern. That can definitely help some individuals.
Talk about, this is a general question, but talk about forefoot or midfoot strike versus heel strike versus, I guess it would be really front foot strike. Talk about those three and how people differ physiologically so that they have a preference to one or the other.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I don't know the answer to that in terms of like why somebody would exhibit a forefoot versus a rear foot strike from a physiological or a biomechanical perspective. Mm-hmm. But again, nobody wants my opinion. Let me just talk about the data. Good. In our database. So our database, we have just under 6,000 unique individuals, mm-hmm. really good scientific specific data for these individuals. And we know that 95% of them are rear foot strikers. Mm-hmm. And the other 5% are either midfoot or forefoot. Mm-hmm. About 2 or 3% midfoot, 2 or 3% forefoot. Mm-hmm. So this is their natural running pattern. Mm-hmm. And that is something to be respected without a doubt. I firmly believe that everybody runs as efficiently and as biomechanically efficient as they can. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that there is one running form that everybody should adopt. Uh-huh. I think you can fine tune everybody's running form to help optimize them as an athlete.
Yeah.
So if somebody chooses, if that's their natural foot strike pattern is to be a 4 foot striker, you know, our job is to figure out, okay, well, what are the strength and flexibility components that need to be improved in order to optimize that overall gait pattern?
Interesting.
And I really disagree with, you know, the notion that we should all transition to barefoot or we should all transition to being a 4 foot striker. Those are actually two independent thoughts.
Yeah.
You can be a minimalist or a barefoot runner and still exhibit a rear foot strike.
Interesting. And it does seem like there would be a preference for injury or certain striking patterns would then predispose you to certain kinds of injuries more likely.
Yeah, it's a trade-off in injury. So as you were saying, your knees and hips take a bit of a beating mm-hmm. For most runners. And mm-hmm. most runners are rear foot strikers. But whether you exhibit a 4 foot or a rear foot strike, the one thing that doesn't change is you and your mass. So you weigh the same.
Right.
Whether you're a 4 foot or a rear foot striker. And right. I know that sounds funny, but let me just go just one step deeper. So if you exhibit a rear foot strike, yes, there's a fast and large impact peak that some people attribute to injuries, and injuries are far more complex than to simply say, oh, this is what's leading to the injury. Mm-hmm. And you get to that impact peak by obtaining a 4 foot strike pattern. But by doing that, you actually shorten your stride, and that means you're taking more steps per mile. Mm-hmm. If you take more steps per mile, that means you have more opportunities to load your system per mile. Mm-hmm. And some studies have shown that that's greater tension within the Achilles tendon. Mm-hmm. That's greater strain to the plantar fascia. That's a greater opportunity for stress fractures in your foot. Mm-hmm. So the research has not shown that there's a reduction in injuries. The research has shown that there's a shift in injuries. So if you're a rear foot striker, you're probably going to experience more knee and hip related injuries. If you're a 4 foot striker, you're going to experience more foot, ankle, calf related injuries. There's no magic bullet for reducing injuries. There's just you're taking a different bullet. That's all.
And the strength component, now talk about that, the strength and flexible component, because those do seem like they're things that a lot of us either don't know how to improve on or don't really understand that that's an important part of staying uninjured.
Yeah, so what's really been nice about the barefoot running or the 4 foot strike literature over the past 5 to 6 years is mm-hmm. at first it was an all or none, that right. we could all be doing this.
Yeah.
And now what the research is showing is that we should all, that if you want to do this, there needs to be a gradual movement towards it. And there has to be an underlining training program. Now that training program involves getting your calf muscles more flexible mm-hmm. and getting your calf muscles stronger.
Interesting.
And by doing that, you actually offset that new loading that you're experiencing within your foot yeah. and ankle region. And hopefully that's going to reduce the number of injuries.
Yeah. Wow. I love all the data that you have. And I love the way you're explaining it, because as you've said all along, it's very scientific. Yeah. Now, we are actually going to be moving into our final kick here quite soon. So what kind of summary, how would you like to summarize what we've been talking about and what you've been doing over these many years in kinesiology and running improvement?
I think the summary message I want to provide to the listeners is that the way that you run is optimized for you. So people shouldn't think about adopting a set running pattern. You should think about, how do I get my running pattern just a little bit better? And we know that every running injury is a puzzle. Let me talk about those pieces just for a moment.
Totally.
We look at four main pieces of the puzzle. We look at how you're built, which is your anatomical structure. Now, that's nothing you can change. You can blame your parents. The way you're built is the way you're built.
I blame my parents.
Now, you can, blame your parents. The other three pieces are, of course, the way that you run, your gait biomechanics, how strong you are, and how flexible you are.
Mm-hmm.
And those last three are modifiable. So my research, we actually don't focus on changing your gait biomechanics directly through real-time feedback, for example. Mm-hmm. What we focus on is the interrelationship between, how do I get a muscle stronger? How do I get a muscle more flexible? And then how does that influence your gait biomechanics?
Wow.
And one study that I think really clearly shows this, we took a group of runners who had knee pain,
mm-hmm.
and we put them on a simple strengthening program for their gluteus medius. And I referred to that earlier. It's the mm-hmm. it's a very important muscle. It's on the outside of your hip. And we gave them two strengthening exercises. And what we showed is that they went from a very unpredictable movement pattern, where one step was not the same as what just happened, and it wasn't the same as what's coming up.
Mm.
Meaning you have a very erratic gait pattern, unpredictable. But by getting that muscle stronger, what we measured was a more predictable gait pattern.
Awesome.
And the body understands and knows what to expect step after step. And that's actually what we're seeing in our wearable technology. Using wearable technology, we're seeing that, you know, as people fatigue, that their gait pattern becomes very unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very important measure. We know that that's related to really important diseases like Parkinson's disease and development of early Alzheimer's. It's related to running injuries. So there are important metrics that we can measure. So mm-hmm. strength is really, really important in terms of helping to minimize your chances of an injury. So certainly stick to your training program and get some key muscles a little bit stronger.
I love it. The holidays are here. It's time to recover from a long running season and take care of those niggles. Don't ignore that nagging knee pain that slowed you down last season. Now is the time to recover, rehab, and prepare for a healthy 2019 running season. New Knee is an innovative new product designed to provide immediate relief of runners' knee symptoms, invented by two-time Ironman Mike Emmerling. New Knee is the result of his own five-year struggle with runner's knee. Unable to get relief from other remedies, Mike came up with his own solution. A solution so effective that even Pro Football Hall of Fame running back Thurman Thomas is using it to stay fit and active. New Knee has even been five-star rated by running injury specialist Dr. Ben Shadow. New Knee is not like other compression-based knee sleeves and supports. In fact, the research reveals that pressure relief, not compression, is the key to relief of runner's knee symptoms. By relieving the pressure on your patella, your kneecap, New Knee can provide immediate relief of runner's knee pain. New Knee is now helping runners from Florida to Alaska. Mike receives weekly emails from runners like Aubrey. Here's what she had to say about New Knee. I was having pain under my kneecap on one of my latest long runs. I had a big race approaching and came across New Knee when looking up runner's knee. I quickly ordered and used it in my race, and it worked great with no pain. I will be using New Knee on all my long runs. Don't let knee pain slow you down. Do what Aubrey did and let New Knee help you run without knee pain. Stop runner's knee in its tracks by going to newkneeshop.com. That's NUNEESHOP.com. And use code RC30 for a 30% discount. Hey, welcome back with Dr. Reed Ferber, Director of the University of Calgary Running Injury Clinic. We are approaching the final kick, Dr. Ferber. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
All right. So what is a favorite local training run in Calgary? Tell us where to park, name of starting point, how far, type of terrain, anything that would allow one of us, either U.S. people or people from outside of Calgary, to come and take a nice run in Calgary.
You bet. So the Douglas Fir Trail is the name of the run, and mm-hmm. you park in Edworthy Park, which is right at the shores of the Bow River. So you come off of a Bow Trail and you follow a lovely little road down, and you park. And the Douglas Fir Trail, it's about 10 kilometers. There's you're in just some big timber right in the middle of Calgary, and you would never know it. You would think that you were stuck right in the middle of the mountains.
Uh-huh.
The trail just goes up and down, and then it's a beautiful flat trail home back to Edworthy Park in the parking lot right along the Bow River.
Wow, that sounds terrific. And you said it was a 10K more or less?
Yeah.
Perfect. Okay, so a favorite or recommended running or running-related book?
Well, I'm going to promote my book.
All right, do
so
it.
What we found is that, you know, the interplay of these four pieces is really complex. And I was approached by a book publisher, and they said, hey, could you write a textbook on running injuries? And as a researcher, I wanted to pay attention to research, so I said no. then I started to, as our systems started rolling out to different clinics, I realized that there's no one true, you know, good source of information. So we pulled together about 250 research articles. It's called Running Mechanics and Gait Analysis. And I co-authored it with Sherry McDonald, who's a fantastic sport physio mm-hmm. here in Calgary and a former student of mine. And it's just a really nice comprehensive overview of research and the science behind gait analysis and running injuries.
Wow. Well, thank you for recommending that. I'm really fascinated by that kind of thing. It sounds like it's pretty educational and not necessarily like fast reading kind of thing where, you know, there's a story behind it.
Yeah, I have to admit it's a little bit dense at times, and we try to pack as much data in as we can, but it's we literally wrote it for coaches,
yay,
clinicians, and the learned runner, somebody who is really trying to understand their mechanics. I think all three can get quite a bit out of it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for suggesting that. So, okay, moving to a little lighter subject, a humorous story to share about running or your life that you're willing to share with our listeners.
Oh, yeah. So when the idea that anybody can run a marathon firmly planted in my head was I was running the Portland Marathon for the first time.
Okay.
In Portland, Oregon. And there's a fantastic part of it where you go up a big bridge and then you run along the ridge. And you're up high, you're looking down at the Willamette River, and it's gorgeous. And I got passed by someone where it hurt me to watch them run. It's around the 20-mile mark. You still had a good hour to go. And I just remember thinking to myself, how is that person passing me? And then I quickly transitioned to, isn't it awesome that that person is passing me? They looked like they were in pain. They were just trucking along. And it firmly rooted in me that there is not a marathon runner out there. There's runners. And I think anybody can do a marathon. I think you need to set, depending on who you are and what your puzzle looks like, you just need to set yourself up for the proper training program.
Oh, I love that. I totally agree with you. And I've also had that experience, somebody going by who looks like they're in so much pain and they're really making it look awkward to run, and then they're passing you. Okay, well, someone or some subject, this is question number four about running that you would like to listen to in a future podcast here on Run to the Top.
Well, I'm a big fan of Alex Hutchinson, and Dr. Hutchinson, I believe, has been on your program a few years ago.
Yeah.
Alex runs Sweat Science, And he is a prolific writer on this subject. And so much research has happened in the last 2 years. And Alex is always on top of it. So I know back in May 2016, he spoke to you specifically, I believe, about caffeine and running and the effects. Mm. But Alex is just a really fantastic in terms of pulling together scientific literature and making it easily digestible. So
love
Alex
that.
Is kind of one of I'm a big fan of Dr. Hutchinson. Mm-hmm. And I really think that you should talk to someone about chocolate milk.
All right, chocolate milk.
Well, here's the reason I say that is, you know, I write a little article for the Running Room magazine. The Running Room is a running chain here in Canada. There's well over 100 stores. Mm-hmm. And it's a great group. And when I write for them, I never receive more feedback than if I write about barefoot running. There's people, it's a very polarizing subject.
Uh-huh.
And then I was amazed that chocolate milk is equally as polarizing.
Really?
Some very strong opinions out there on chocolate milk. And I'm certainly not a dietitian, nor a nutritionist, nor an expert on this. I just wanted to provide a little blurb.
Yeah.
About, you know, carbo loading and the effects on the body. And I really got a lot of feedback, some of it good, some of it not so good.
Indeed.
In terms of how passionate people are about the effects of chocolate milk on recovery from a run.
All right. Alex Hutchinson, read chocolate milk. Okay, well, now is the time when we actually want you to share contact information and how our listeners would be able to follow your program and get more details on what you offer.
You bet. So certainly our website, runninginjuryclinic.com, is a great resource. There's a lot of educational materials on there, a lot of science, a lot of exercises that people can take advantage of. There's an injury analysis tool on there as well. So runninginjuryclinic.com. And then I'm really proud of our WeTrack training program, and that can be found at ucalgary.ca/WeTrack. So WeTrac, and the WeTrack training program is really the main focus and thrust of our research. How do we tag humans like wildlife? How do we follow them out in the real world? And how can we really make an impact in terms of reducing musculoskeletal injuries for runners?
Excellent. And your book again, this textbook that I've got to get a hold of for sure. So what was the name of it?
Running Mechanics and Gait Analysis, mm-hmm. By Reid Ferber and Sherry McDonald. And it's published by Human Kinetics.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you for this information, Reid. And thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. Be sure to follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. And please subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. And you'll be notified that way every week when a new episode is published. Thank you so much, Dr. Ferber, for speaking with us today. And thank you also for your help in advancing technology to keep runners out there on the roads, tracks, and trails.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And finally, thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.